Yeah, hey, this is Lucas Barfield, and you are tuned into the Cannabis Corner right here on KTAH LPFM 101.9. Thanks for tuning in today. We got a great show for you today. We have a guest coming on later. Casey Connell is going to be joining us again, and he's going to be talking today about perpetual harvest. We're going to be kind of pulling the curtain back and taking a look at what goes on at some of these large grows for all those of you interested. So thanks again for tuning in. My name is Lucas Barfield. I'm a local cannabis activist and educator. I teach a class at Tacoma Community College on cannabis, a continuing education class. And I'm really happy to be here with you today. Cannabis has been one of those things that's just kind of always been in my life. I didn't really realize this until recently. You know, as you get older, you kind of look back and you're like, wow, this is something that has kind of been in my life all the way back when I was just a little kid in Alabama. And I really am happy to be out here spreading the word about this plant and telling everybody about what is going on with cannabis in the world and in the state of Washington. And so let's go ahead and get started. And we're going to get started with a little new addition I have that we're doing with the legislative session going on, and that is our legislative update. And it's kind of the same thing going on down in Olympia that is going on last time we spoke. There's just two major bills that I'm kind of keeping an eye on that have to do with cannabis. One of those is SB 5234, and what this bill does is remove the excise tax for medical cannabis, or actually Department of Health approved cannabis. And so for those of you that don't know, there is only one kind of cannabis in the whole state of Washington that is required to have pesticide tests, and that is Department of Health cannabis. And you can find that at some stores. You're going to need to ask, and there should be like a little sticker or some kind of designation that tells you that it is Department of Health cannabis. And so what they're trying to do is they're wanting to remove the excise tax on this product, these types of products only, and that is going to be only for cannabis patients who are registered on the marijuana authorization database. And so just a quick review, there are two basic kinds of medical cannabis patients here in Washington State. We have a qualified patient, so that's someone off the database who goes to a doctor and gets a recommendation. Then there's another step that you can take and get registered, and this allows you some other rights and some other things according to the Washington State government. And it is the way it is. A lot of people don't like the registry. I am on the registry. A lot of people are not. But a lot of states do have these. So it's just something that we're having to deal with. And so this bill will actually take the excise tax off of the DOH cannabis for people on that registry. Now, just as an aside, and I always like to mention this, that Washington State is the only state in the entire United States that taxes medical cannabis to begin with. And so that is sort of an alarming fact there that I always like to mention. And it's quite shocking considering how Washington likes to have its liberal and progressive reputation, that they are the only ones out there that tax medical cannabis. Florida doesn't. I mean, I could just go down through a whole long list of conservative states that don't tax medical cannabis, while here in Washington, the sick, the disabled, veterans, people on PTSD veterans that are using this product to help them are paying a 37% excise tax for all the cannabis they buy. And so this bill will kind of get us in line with a lot of other states, so it's a really good thing. Now, here's the status on the bill. It kind of has died, but it's still being kept alive. There was a problem with the fiscal note. Some of the language apparently got the LCB confused, and they came back with like a $19 million fiscal note, which is way too high. There's not that much DOH cannabis even sold in Washington State. And so that we knew that that number was really high. And so they changed the language and put an amendment in there that has dropped that number way down. And so it is looking like, although the bill sort of was stuck in committee, they're going to move it into a type of bill that has to do with the budget. So it kind of has a little extra life. And so we'll keep an eye on that and let you know what happens with that. It has some bigger names on there. Kaiser and Ann Rivers are signed on, the senator. So once you see some of the bigger names signed on to some of these bills, you know that they might kind of make it through. So we'll see what's going on with that. Now, let's move on to the next thing, which is the homegrown bill. And if you've been listening to KTAH in the Cannabis Corner, which I hope you have, you heard an interview with John Kingsbury last show talking about the homegrown bills, HB 1131 and SB 5155. Now, these bills, they stalled. They stopped. The head of the committee, Commerce and Gaming in the House, Sanford, Representative Sanford, he just said no, he wasn't going to move it. And they met with him and tried to get him to, and he would not pass it. Now, I'm guessing the same thing was going on in the Senate with that, too. Now, however, one of the prime sponsors has sort of pulled a trick and put this in an amendment, and it's on the, they're trying to get it into the, onto the floor. Because apparently there's a lot of people that will vote for this on the floor, but they couldn't get it through the committee, if that makes any sense. I really don't understand what's going on down in Olympia. I mean, how can you have a bill that everybody's like, this will pass on the floor, but then you got a couple of people in a committee saying they're not going to pass it? It's just shocking how our government works sometimes. But it is still has a little life in it. So if you were listening to that interview, John gave you some instructions on how to make your voice heard on this bill. And so maybe give a call down to Olympia. Let them know that you're paying attention about these home grows, because honestly, we really need people, non-medical cannabis people, speaking up about cannabis in Washington State. The legislature, frankly, is probably sick and tired of just seeing all the same people coming down there every year. And it literally is kind of all the same group of people. And hats off to them for doing that. But we really need regular citizens who are either recreational cannabis users, maybe on the weekends or just from time to time, or people that are not even cannabis users at all, sort of join in and make your voice heard on this issue. It is very important. Growing cannabis is a human right. It's a plant, and we should not be kept from doing it by the government or anyone else. And we just need to stand up for this in our society. It's all about the little things. If the government can't allow you to grow a plant or figure out how to regulate it correctly, how can we trust them to really do anything else? So that's really where this boiled down for me. Now, that's enough for my talking about these bills and our little legislative update. And we're gonna move into our headlines. This week, we're talking about, first up headline is talking about Detroit Lions wide receiver Calvin Johnson has applied for a medical cannabis license in suburban Detroit. And these kind of things are big news. I always like to cover when football players or stars get into cannabis, is because this is some of the ways that it's going to kind of take down those barriers. Because these are people that are in our society and kind of held up as role models. And once they start saying it's okay and start participating in the cannabis, it kind of elevates it up into sort of a mainstream thing. Now, hopefully this works out okay for him, because medical cannabis in Michigan is still there. However, they just passed recreational cannabis, and we're hoping that Michigan does not go the same way as Washington State and they get rid of all the medical cannabis dispensaries. But good luck to Calvin Johnson's and just some of the other sports stars that have gotten into cannabis recently. Joe Montana, Ricky Williams, and John Sally, Al Harrington, and Lamar Odom. Those are just some of the athletes that have gotten into medical cannabis or cannabis in general. But you still see a lot of the college football players are always getting arrested for cannabis. And the NFL right now is sort of grappling with this. Do we allow our players to use cannabis for pain relief? So this is something that's always going on in sport. So on to our next headline. And this headline is about the longest running, or the person that has been held in prison the longest for cannabis, is about to be released. Now, this man, I wanted to get his name right, Antonio Tony Bascaro, he is actually a Bay of Pigs veteran. He was arrested in 1980. They said they smuggled in over 500,000 pounds of marijuana or cannabis into Florida. And this was a big ring, I believe. There was another. They had like a church there in South Florida, and this could have been part of that. But there was massive amounts of cannabis coming in South Florida at that time, and he was arrested. And this ring just so happened, and this is according to the prosecutors and everything, they only brought cannabis into the United States. They weren't really involved with cocaine or anything. And so he has been in prison. He was sentenced to 60 years, and he has been in prison for 40 years, and he's about to get out for good behavior. And they've had all these different things. They were trying to get Obama to let him out. He wouldn't let him out. They were thinking some of these new sentencing laws that they passed were going to let him out. They didn't let him out. And the poor guy, just so kind of tell you how crazy this is, the ringleader of this was released in the 1990s. He only served 12 years in prison. He cooperated with authorities, and he was released in the 1990s, and he even told the news he was shocked that Tony Buscaro is even still in prison. He didn't even know. And so this guy's getting out, and he was a Bay of Pigs veteran. Now, here's where it kind of gets crazy, and we kind of can bring into some of the stuff going on right now with the Trump administration. He's actually a Cuban national, and he had been recruited by the CIA. Man, this guy's probably got some stories. We should try to get this guy on Radio Tacoma when he gets out of prison. He was recruited by the CIA. He was trained in Guatemala as a pilot to fly into the Bay of Pigs. Now, of course, we all know how that went down. It was, you know, a flop for President Kennedy. A lot of people were captured. A lot of people were killed. He never left the runway, but he was approached in the 1980s, and he used his flying skills to start using this, doing this cannabis racket. And apparently they were bringing in, he was making about $1 million a year doing this. So now here's where the problem is. He's a Cuban national, and he's afraid when he gets out of prison that he's going to report to the ICE, ICE, and they're going to deport him to Cuba. Which, guess what? When he gets to Cuba, he's going to get thrown in prison in Cuba because he's a traitor, because he was working for the United States. And so this guy, he's really, Mr. Buscaro, he's really up in there, really knowing what to do. And the guy is 84 years old, and his granddaughter is just saying, hey, kind of let the guy out and have just a normal retirement. And so we're going to keep an eye on this. He has 100 more days before he gets out. And I predict, I don't think they're going to deport him. Just for the fact that it's to Cuba. And we all know the government right now in the United States is on a tear against socialism. They don't like Cuba. They don't like Venezuela. And I just don't see them deporting a Cuban right now with the way things are going. And the Cuban community in the South Florida area is very, well, not all of them, but there's a very pro-Trump faction there in South Florida. And so hopefully they kind of speak up and they don't deport this guy to Cuba, because he suffered enough, 40 years in prison. Now, he was smuggling in a lot of cannabis, $500 million. But, you know, someone who can just pull himself up by his bootstraps, get it together, get a plane, figure out how to fly in 500,000 pounds of cannabis from South America to Florida, it sounds to me like he doesn't need to get put in prison. It sounds to me like he needs a job. And so this guy, and so hopefully Mr. Buscaro figures this out, and we'll keep an eye on that for you. So next up, and by the way, after all this stuff has happened to him, and they keep saying you're going to get out, and they don't let him go out, he says, I'll believe I'll get out when I'm on the other side of the fence. So good luck to Mr. Buscaro. So next up, we're going to kind of do a PSA here kind of thing. It's found this on Cannabis Now, or Cannabis Business Times, I think it was. What is in your vape cartridge? Now, these are those little, they're like little cartridges. If you're not familiar with cannabis, and you've never seen one of these, they're usually about an inch and a half long, and they have inside them little wicks, and they contain a mixture of cannabis and some other substances, and you can screw these into a device and vape them just like people vape e-cigarettes. And these are the biggest selling things in Colorado, Oregon, and California right now. They didn't put Washington in the statistics, but I'm guessing probably Washington too. And just as a medical cannabis person, these things are very convenient. So I have used them from time to time. And they're discreet and they're easy to use. But here are some things you need to watch out for them when you're using them. So the higher quality ones are made of glass, ceramic, or metal. You don't want to get the ones that have the plastic, that are the cartridge is made out of plastic. And so when you get it, you're going to have to do some consumer education here on your own, because you don't always know, the people in the store don't always know what's inside the package as far as whether it's glass or plastic. So either you're going to have to keep track when you buy it, say, okay, this is plastic, or I would suggest doing a little research and finding some DOH compliant people that sell these. And you can even contact the processors and producers and really ask them, okay, what is your vessel made out of? Is it ceramic, metal, or glass? You don't want the plastic ones. And you also don't want to get the ones that don't leak. Now, this is something where you're going to have to, if you buy one that leaks, make a note so that you, when you go back, you don't want to necessarily buy that same brand. Now, here's something that I didn't know, terpenes, I did know that you could do this, but this is a big practice with these vape carts, is the terpenes, which are the aromatic compounds in cannabis that give each strain its effects. These terpenes, they can remove these, and then they put them back in later when they do the vape cartridge mixture. And so maybe find out how the terpenes are processed. Are they left in? Is the extraction extracted, and then everything's left into the extraction, then put into the cartridge, or is everything separated out and put back in later? Because they'll customize how much terpenes they have in them. Now, I'm not really saying which one is the best and which one is better than the other, but it's just some things to know. I think the ones that just is the full plant, where they're not separating everything out, will probably be just a little better, just because it's the full plant thing where you want the full plant all the time. So then you always want to know what the extraction method is. How would they extract? Is it CO2? Is it hydrocarbon? How was those extracted? Was it alcohol? The thing they mix the stuff, and then you need to be aware of the mixture. The mixtures of these can be glycerin or propylene glycol. So this is the same stuff that they mix for e-cigarettes. So you might want to be aware of that. Educate yourself. Make sure you know what is in the vape cartridge as far as the base substance that they're mixing the cannabinoids into. And there's one other thing. Oh, the artificial flavors are from the e-cigarette industry. So if you get one that have the flavors, just be aware, those are the same kind of flavors that are in the e-cigarettes, and those are not, there's a lot of controversy around those, whether they're safe or okay. So just be aware of that, because you can get some of these cartridges that from time to time where you use them and you're just like, okay, something's just not quite right with this. So you really need to pay attention when you buy a product. Maybe make a little note, okay, was this good or bad? And then kind of shop around, ask, here's some questions you want to ask. What's your housing made out of? And then do the seals hold? What additives are in your cartridge? And are your terpenes added back in, or is it the whole plant extract? And what extraction method we're using? Now, that might be hard to answer all those questions, but with a little research and a little know-how, and don't forget, you can ask for the accompanying materials with each product there at the store, and that they will tell you some more things about than just about your cannabis product than what is just on the packaging. So up next, we're going to get into our interview with Casey Connell. He's going to kind of get into the weeds, as it were, and talk about perpetual harvest or perpetual gardening. Yeah, and so we are joined today again by Casey Connell from Contender Gardens, and he's going to be here with us today talking about a couple different things. Really want to thank him for being here today. I know he's had to take a trip down to Portland to a conference, and he's going to kind of tell us about what was happening with that. So how you doing today, Casey?
I'm doing good, Lucas. Thanks for having me.
You were down in Portland this weekend. I think you're still there. So what was going on down there with the cannabis industry?
Yeah, they had a conference down there. It was, I believe, the fifth cannabis collaborative conference in Portland. And they asked me to come speak. My topic was biological controls and beneficial insects, basically, and, you know, how to use them, clean cannabis. It's kind of a topic I speak a lot about. And they gave me a booth there and kind of let me set up a bunch of things, which was really cool. So I had some time with some one-on-one with a lot of folks. And I think the main topic there, a lot of what I heard going on and what people were talking about a lot was, you know, the new farm bill and hemp now being legal in the U.S. and a lot of CBD talk and hemp flower, right?
Yeah.
It was very interesting. It was, the networking there was phenomenal. So I really made the best of it.
So they used the flower off the hemp plant, sort of just like they used the flower off a high THC cannabis plant. But because a hemp plant is a cannabis plant, it's just bred for more for fiber. So, but they're using the hemp plant that has the flowers on it to get most of the CBD in the United States, right?
Yeah, my understanding is, you know, that breeding and hemp's come a long way, and so we're growing. I mean, you wouldn't be able to tell the difference between a high THC cannabis plant and a high CBD, low THC hemp plant. You know, the flowers look the same, and they're extracting the entire plant, and that gives you a lot more CBD in medicine.
Awesome. Well, yeah, that's what I've you just see a lot of that, and I know there's still kind of some questions up and around the farm bill about what exactly is going to happen, and some people are kind of worried about it, and some people say it's a great thing, so we'll just have to wait and see. I know that it was a really big agricultural crop up until, you know, the 1950s at least, so it's really time for us to kind of get back on this doing the hemp thing for a whole variety of reasons.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting ride.
All right, so we're going to have you here today. We want to talk about, I want to talk to you and kind of pull the curtain back a little bit and talk about kind of what goes on at a 502 producer, because a lot of people out here, you know, you go to the store, you get the cannabis in the packaging, and then, but, you know, how does it get there? And you were going to talk to me about something I really find fascinating. And it kind of gets a little complicated, and that's kind of really why I like it, just because it just seems really interesting, and there's a whole lot you can do with it. We're going to talk about perpetual gardening and cannabis, and we can take this up on a very large scale all the way down to a small scale. But before we want to get started, I just wanted to remind everybody that in the state of Washington, unless you have a medical cannabis qualification or you are registered on the medical cannabis database, or you are a licensed I-502 producer, that you cannot grow cannabis yet. They're trying to pass a home grow bill right now, but I just wanted to remind you of that. And this information is mainly just for kind of pulling the curtain back and looking behind it. We are not going over this to suggest that anybody grow cannabis at their home unless they are registered medical cannabis patients. So kind of just wanted to get that out of the way. And so tell us, what is perpetual garden, Casey? Gardening with when it comes to cannabis.
You know, I like to call it a perpetual harvest, you know, perpetual harvesting.
Okay.
And there's many ways to maybe explain it and look at it. And, you know, if you really put it down on paper and draw it, I think it really gives you a really good idea. You know, picture is worth a thousand words.
Yeah,
but
right.
It's basically a method of getting continuous harvests frequently, and more frequently than, say, your 8-week flowering period. And you don't need, you know, some people might think, look at that, a little confusing, but You can do perpetual harvests and perpetuals of rooms or structures, you know, greenhouses or indoor rooms, or you can do it in just one room, and you would just have different aged plants in that one room. And the perpetual harvest can be set up differently depending on, say, a medical grower's needs, or usually a plant count plays a big role. Mm-hmm. Or you know, the setup of the facility. If you walked in and bought a facility and this is the way they had it set up, or how many rooms you did have to start with and you wanted to work with the space you're given, to you know, more frequent fresh product, if that's something that you know, every grower is a little different, and perpetuals are pretty common, perpetual harvests. There's a lot of pros and some cons to them. Say if you're working with a smaller space or one space, but I was going to walk you guys through some of it and try to paint a pretty picture so it's easy for the audience to visualize it.
Okay, awesome. So and, go ahead and tell us about it.
Yeah, basically I'll start like this. So I look at it as doing row crops, and your plant rows represent time. And, you know, in commercial ag, time is equal to money. And for a medical patient, time would equal your medicine. And so I think when we talk about commercially and just in general, any kind of growing, I think if you were able to do perpetuals of individual flowering rooms or structures, that would be, you know, setting yourself up for success. That would be great. What does that mean? That means that all the plants in that room or that structure are aged the same. They're on the same feeding schedule. If they're being sprayed, they'd be sprayed the same. So timing's important. You know, if you're using biological controls on them. So yeah, rows representing time, and that. So what does that mean? You know, when you look at your room, you would need multiple rows of different aged plants. And the cool thing about the perpetuals of rooms, I'll take a step back, is really, you know, your efficiency, your labor efficiency. You know, if you can set up your irrigation to that room and it's all on the same feeding schedule, you know, so you're only having to mix a batch of nutrients for once, you know, for that line or for that room, different, you know, cannabis feeds throughout their weeks and flowering, their needs are different. So if you're having a hand water or if they're on, if the perpetual rotation is large and you have irrigation lines for each row, you would have to make the different nutrient mixes for those weeks because they'd be on different weeks. So it's a little more time and work.
So basically you're having to start from the beginning. So let's say you're doing, you say represent time. So every 2 weeks you're having to start new plants to kind of keep them coming up behind the ones that you harvest, and then you have to bring in some more each time. So you're starting out about every 2 weeks. Is that right?
That's correct. Right? So if you're harvesting every 2 weeks, if that's, say, the setup that you chose, right, bi-monthly, that means that you're having a harvest, a rotation, up-potting, and even cloning every 2 weeks.
Oh, okay.
There's a lot of benefits to that, and one of those I would just say off the bat is that you're spreading out your workload. But that would be correct. Now, if you're doing this, if your perpetuals are, say, every month, you know, and flowering cycle's 8 weeks, well, then you would have two rows, right? Mm-hmm. 1, 2, 3, 4, and then you're 5, 6, 7, 8,
okay.
Right? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. So every 4 weeks, you would harvest, clear out, rotate, up pot, you know, bring your next row in. Ideally, in the perfect world, you'd like to do it the same day you harvest. You'd like to be able to sterilize, clean, and feed your row, or if not, the very next day. So you're not losing time, right?
Okay, yeah.
You know, if you're losing a day or two or three or even a week every rotation to clear out that room, harvest it, clean it, rotate them in. I mean, if you think about that, if you lose a week every harvest and you're harvesting every 2 weeks, do the math. I mean, that's a lot of weeks you're going to lose throughout the year. That's a lot less harvest you're going to have that year. And time equals money, right? Or time equals the medicine that you're going to have for yourself.
Yeah, that's right. Because if you're a patient, you know, there's certain – you need to keep it going, because if you run out, then your symptoms will come back or you have to spend more money. So a lot of times you don't have that. So that's a really good point.
Yeah. When you're talking a small scale garden, it's really great. If you're just talking, hey, I have two plants in this row, you know, and so you're going to harvest two plants this weekend. You know, you could easily pull those two plants out and move or rotate your plants. You didn't even have to move them if you didn't want. You can transplant your two youngest plants of a certain category, which I'll go into on the next few slides, I guess. You can up-pot those, up-pot your solo cups or your clones into your 1 gallons into your 2 gallons, let's just say. You bring in your 5-gallon pot that's in veg, which would be your senior pot, and now your room and flower is full again, you know, that same day. And you could take your clones, you know, then you could sit back and do your 2-plant harvest, let it dry for the weekend. So you just broke up your workload substantially. Gives you time to, you actually can harvest 2 plants and not 18, let's say, right? It's manageable for one person to do it in a short amount of time. Up-potting 2 plants of each category is quick and easy. You know, 2 solo cups go to 1 gallons, 2 1-gallons will go to 2 gallons. You'll pop some 2 gallons into 5 gallons, and minimal soil, minimal labor. You'll take your, in a perfect world, if you're harvesting 2 plants and rotating 2 plants, you would really only need 2 clones.
Yeah.
Of course, you'd want to take more than that and count for a loss, but gosh, taking 2 clones is, you know, takes a minimal amount of time.
Yeah.
Breaking up your workload, so your plant maintenance, your topping, your pruning, if you're sterilizing your room or your walls, fans, whatnot, it's not one huge task, you know, on a large scale, say, compared to a commercial cultivation.
Yeah.
I think one of the important things to touch on is, you know, when you have perpetual of rooms compared to only having one room, let's just say you had to spray your youngest row of plants and flower, you know, you're moving into flower, you want to do some knockbacks. Well, if you have one room and all the plants are aged 2 weeks apart from each other, your oldest row is in that room. It's about a week or two away from harvesting, and you're spraying your youngest row. Well, you could have some cross-contamination there. So the pests and the cross-contamination are just something to keep in mind. When you have perpetuals of rooms, if you have a plant that's on week one of flower and you want to spray that entire room down, you know, you could probably feel confident that you can do that without cross-contaminating. If you have perpetuals and you're doing that in one room or one structure, that room is never going to be empty at one time. You're constantly going to be harvesting one row and feeding one row. So you're constantly going to have plants in there. So if you think about following your 8-week feeding chart and think about cannabis having 8 weeks to flower, well, if you're doing row crops and your rotations are every 2 weeks, that means you would need 4 rows. Once you build up that room and it's full, every 2 weeks you're going to have a harvest. That oldest row is going to bump out and the youngest row is going to come in from your veg room, right? You're going to feed it. It doesn't really matter how many plants you have in each row when you're doing commercial ag, and it's not really a plant count scenario for us. It's more about canopy. So that's to the individual grower or the square footage of the place, or how large do you want to finish your plants out to begin with, you know, if you're doing 10-gallon pots or if you're doing 3-gallon pots. So the number of plants in that row is what's going to be different depending on the space it's going to, the number of plants you're going to need to fill that space. But the takeaway is 4 rows on an 8-week schedule, you're going to have 4 rows in your flowering room, and each row represents the time of 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Or another way to look at rows is rooms.
Yeah. Okay.
So if you're doing perpetuals of rooms, you would have 4 rooms, and each room represents time and a whole entire row. So every 2 weeks, you would clear out an entire room
and then refill,
sterilize it, and rotate it. So 4 rows or 4 rooms, following an 8-week chart. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. I'm gonna call these your rows per class. So for example, like when we went to high school and college, right? There were freshmen and sophomores and juniors and seniors, right? So for your freshmen, you want to have 2 rows of solo cups. So what does that mean? To take a step back, in your solo cup, your clones that are in a solo cup, they're going to sit in that solo cup for 4 weeks, right? Before they move forward and get put into their 1 gallon. Because if there's 2 rows and rows representing time of 2 weeks, that means they'll sit there 1, 2, then they'll move 3, 4,
mm-hmm.
That's 4 weeks they just had in that time frame. And now they're bumping into their 1 gallon.
Now they're going
up. And in the 1 gallon, which is your sophomore class, it's also the same scenario, 2 weeks. So it's going to go 1, 2, 3, 4 before it moves forward. So another 4 weeks into a 1 gallon.
Yeah.
And then it's going to go into your junior pot. and that junior pot I have is a 2 gallon. In this scenario, I have 3 rows, and each same scenario representing 2 weeks of time. So your sophomore goes into from a 1 gallon to a junior in a 2 gallon, and it's going to stay there for 6 weeks. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. It needs 3 rows. And why is that? I like to have this in this scenario because it's about to take a huge jump from a 2 gallon to a 20 gallon.
Yeah. Okay.
And so I like to overextend my plants. I have felt that when my plants are overextended and they feed more frequently, that correlates with the yield that I get. So I like to have plants that are more overextended and I like to feed them more often.
Okay. Yeah.
And there you go. You have your juniors. 3 rows of juniors in 2 gallons, all 2 weeks older or younger than the other row. Now they're going to bump into your 20 gallons, your seniors.
Yeah, okay.
For this program, I also have 3 rows of seniors. And so they're going to go, they're going to sit in their 20-gallon pot for 6 weeks.
Now we're still vegging, right?
Yep, you're okay. Still vegging before you go into your flowering room. It's going to need that time from a 2 gallon to a 20 gallon to get, really well established in that 20 gallon pot. Now, every strain is different. So some strains will grow a lot faster and you might not need this many rows.
I wanted to ask you, it is a little bit complicated, but how do you keep track of all this? Are you writing this down on the pots and, keeping like a chart hanging up on each row? How are you keeping up with all this as you go through a growth cycle like this?
You know, that's a very good question. The different books I've read, when they've tried to explain perpetual harvest, there's been different explanations of how to visualize this. And, the day you put your plants in flower, take 2 clones and so there's different ways to explain these scenarios that are identical. For me, when it was drawn down on paper, that's how I understood it, when I was able to visualize it. It was very complicated to read and understand how to follow the perpetuals. I would suggest always keeping things on a calendar. I think that's
okay,
that's pretty clever. But you actually don't have to do that, knowing that your rows represent time and that time represents space. Because that's exactly what that equals. Time, your time equals your rows, right? And your rows take up and equal space. Just knowing that you need to have those spaces filled with those size plants. You know, if you want to lay out, draw out, or visualize in your or build your facility in a manner that this is very easy to follow and everything moves like an assembly line.
Yeah.
It becomes not needed to have this on a calendar anymore. Yeah. But your weeks in flower and your feeding, that becomes something that becomes a little more something you need to keep track of. You know, when you go from, week 1 to week 2, right? When that all changes, when the feeding changes, and when you rotate harvest, that is something that I would very strongly suggest to have on a calendar.
Yeah, okay. So I wanted to ask you, how can this help medical patients who might have like a small space or a closet or just a little small room somewhere in their house?
You know, these perpetuals are ideal for small spaces like closets and bedrooms.
Yeah.
You could have a rack of plants on the top rack. You have your ones or say 2 gallons or maybe your 2 gallons on the top and your lights are on the ceiling. And on the bottom rack, you have your 1 gallons, and the lights are on the top of that middle rack area.
Yeah.
And your solo cups are underneath the fluorescent, and then only your seniors are under HID.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay.
Suddenly, you're cutting your power back because you can use T5s or something of less power, or less intensity for those small age plants. So it becomes quite amazing to see such a large production in flowering plants. And when you look and compare that to the amount of plants and the space you have in veg, but sure enough, you're making that work. Little pros and cons really quick, Lucas. You know, you're spreading out your workload, right? When you're having more frequent, less harvests, more frequent smaller harvests. The harvests are more manageable, yeah. But you have those harvests more frequently. So there's a lot of perks to that. And one of those things is your increased speed of your learning and your R&D. So if you're running different strains, if you're running different soil, different lighting, you want to switch out your lights. And so you get to see the fruits of your work there a lot more frequent and often. And you don't have to wait eight weeks to see a crop or see that strain and how it produced, because you're constantly cloning, you're constantly moving plants in rotation. Mm-hmm. And so you have a vertical learning curve, which is quite an advantage. You have consistent fresh product, which is great. Here the retailers are big on, you know, harvest date. If you don't have the facility to cure and store your product properly, then maybe having more smaller, more frequent, fresher crops, so you know you can get rid of all that in a timely manner, is important. Your smaller dry room, you know, you're only harvesting one row or one section of the room or one room, and suddenly your closet is an ideal space for a dry room. You're not harvesting that entire space at once. 2 weeks later, you have your nest harvest. By that time, that crop has dried and is now curing and has moved out of that space. So your dry room is smaller, and it makes it great for the smaller grower who might be using his closet to dry in.
Okay.
You're maximizing your space and your time. You know, the important thing here, though, is to make this, you know, the time equaling money or medicine, you know, is, you know, you want to maximize your space. The same day you harvest and rotate and move your plants out is the same day that, or the same day you harvest is the same day that you want to bring your senior plants in from veg and bring them into flower, is the same day that you want to up pot your 1 gallons to 2 gallons, your solo cups to 1 gallons, your clones to solos. So you maximize your square footage at all times. Your square footage is to capacity, or you're using it efficiently because you're paying for that electricity. You're paying for that air conditioner.
Yeah.
You know, if you fall behind and don't get it done for days or a week, you know, time in our world, commercial ag, time is money. You can't make up that time. You can't make up that harvest.
Nope.
And for our patients, time is medicine. So if it's taking you a while to harvest, clear out, rotate, sanitize, clone, up pot, think about the extra harvest that you're not going to get that year if you're really truly harvesting every 2 weeks. That's 26 harvests a year if you can stay on schedule.
Right.
Your veg room is smaller, so that's a pro right there, and substantially smaller, especially when a lot of veg rooms are vertical. You see a lot of racks and tables. People go vertical with their plants all the time.
Yep.
And you have more connoisseur quality controlled smaller batches. Yep. So for those connoisseur growers that can baby every plant and want to do that and have the ability to do that, you know, your rows of plants, you're not talking hundreds or thousands, although you could do perpetuals at a very large scale. That's what most people are doing. But in a small for a small grower, a basement or a bedroom, closet, garage grower, you know, your rows are of two or three plants. Yeah. And you can baby those two or three plants in every stage and watch them. It becomes manageable. You're going to have a great crop and a happy plant. And then something for me that I've noticed somewhat important is you're spreading out your workload for your employees. So you actually don't need as much employees. And why is that? Because if time is money and I would literally need 20 people to help me take down this massive room, if it was all harvesting at one time, all hands on deck for us to get it down in a timely manner, for us to be able to sanitize and rotate our plants in again. Well, if I'm harvesting a fraction of that room because they're perpetually, I don't need that many employees. We could still get it done in a timely manner. We get to break up the load. We still get to do our up potting, rotating, plant maintenance, sterilizing. And so the amount of labor that you'll need on a large scale crop or a large scale harvest is a lot of labor to get it out and down in a certain amount of time. If staying on schedule is important, and for us commercial growers, it is, right? Time means yep. money. It's everything.
Because if you get behind, you know, stores, they'll sell out, and then you're not selling your product in the store.
So if you can envision this, gosh, you know, we're only harvesting one structure. If you got four, right, one of the structures is coming down. Your guys can get in there, cut it down, hang dry, you know, or if three of them can start doing that. Your other guys can go in and start sterilizing, cleaning, or up-potting your clones, up-potting your the plants and veg, getting ready to rotate, taking your clones. And before you know it, you were able to do multiple tasks that are much smaller, so you're switching up your tasks. They're a lot less labor-intensive, a lot less hands on deck. And what does that do to you as the patient or the business owner? Well, that's less training of employees. That's cost.
Yep.
That's less scheduling conflict and juggling employee schedules, and that's less L&I to deal with when you're dealing with L&I and employer taxes, and that's less babysitting that you're having to do if you're having to babysit employees and you know, that all plays a role, and it's associated with cost. And think about your medical grower. He's going to cut his plants down, hang them in his closet. And he can go out and enjoy his weekend. He can bump, rotate two plants. He's not stuck all weekend trimming those plants. He only had two to do.
Yeah. Okay.
And that's where you know, and a lot of medical patients, we have ailments and medical issues and back problems, and we have to switch up our tasks. We can't work bent over for that long at once, or do that plant maintenance because it's hard on our shoulders, or you know, to do that repetitive work for all those days or hours. Switching up your workload is kind of ideal. You kind of want to or have to do that.
Yeah, totally makes sense.
And so it for somebody who's busy, who has a job, this is a really good rewarding part-time gig that can give them. The system can give them the same amount of medicine as an 8-week one room crop all at once, but breaking up your workload, making it more enjoyable and more doable.
Okay.
Hey, and I'm just going to close off with this, Lucas. I did say about the importance of strain selection and research and development, and it does play a pretty large role when you talk about perpetual harvesting. Especially at a commercial scale, but of course for the patients that are trying to select the right medicine, find out what they like, what works for them. Selecting the strains that are resistant to pests and pathogens, selecting the strains for a cultivator that has that bag appeal, has the terpenes and the potency that their store, their customers are looking for. Those commercially viable strains that grow vigorous. Remember I was saying, if you have those vigorous growing strains, that's an entire row in veg that you don't even need in that class because your plants grow that fast. That's less cost, less soil, right? Less labor, less watering. That's less plants. I mean, all around, you know, in a perfect world, I'd put more plants in my row if I had more space. But there's so much importance to your strain selection and R&D. You know, if time equals rows and rows equals space, then eliminating a row would decrease your overhead.
Yeah.
Of work. Less plant maintenance, less watering, less up-potting, pruning, topping, less nutrient use, less spraying. If you're spraying pesticides, that's cost and labor. Fewer pots, so less things you need, less soil. There's a lot of pros. There's a lot of pros to the R&D and the strain selection, and especially for this system, the perpetual harvesting.
Yeah, thanks so much for joining us today, Casey. I'm sure we will have you on again. Casey is with Contender Gardens as a Tier 1 producer in Spokane, and he was on with us. You can catch the show he was on before, playing right now on Radio Tacoma on Pesticides and Clean Cannabis. And thank you so much for joining us today to talk about perpetual gardens, Casey.
Yeah, Lucas, thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'd really like to thank Casey for coming on the show again with us. If you haven't heard the show before, check it out on Radio Tacoma. He has a show that we talked about clean cannabis and pesticides and cannabis, a subject that everybody needs to know about if you are a recreational cannabis user or a medical cannabis user out there. So we are about to get out of here with It's a Bus segment. And this segment comes again out of Florida. And I didn't catch the town. But kind of an odd story here, third party getting involved, and you don't always see this, citizens getting involved, but an Uber driver gave a man a ride to a hotel, and it just so happened that the man's suitcase really was smelling of cannabis so bad that it alerted the Uber driver, and then the Uber driver called the police, and then they showed up at the hotel and arrested the man for 10 pounds of cannabis. And, you know, here again, it just seems to me a man has a 10 pounds of cannabis and is smelling so bad that it's coming out of the suitcase, which is telling you that it's really fine quality cannabis. It sounds to me in Florida that he doesn't need to be arrested, that the man needs a job. Cannabis, medical cannabis is legal in Florida. Now, you can't have 10 pounds, and recreational cannabis is coming too, and you probably won't be able to hold 10 pounds then either. However, we really just need to kind of get out of this mindset of prohibition and throwing people in jail for a plant. So, my name is Lucas Barfield. If you'd like to check me out on all the social media, you can find me at MJ is Medicine. Also, I am starting to archive the show at my YouTube channel, Blind Guy is Doing So. So check that out, and have a good day. Bye-bye.